And welcome to this week's episode of Terrorvision. I am Ben Gorgeous Hansen. Sitting next to me is Toby Fantasy Jones. With us also is Brad Mac Pearson and Alex Kung Fu Horror, with special Terrorvision guest and all-around huge house fan, Maddie Piano Who Eats People Carrie Pell. And we are, of course, as you can probably tell by the nicknames, reviewing the classic House.
Yeah, they can definitely tell that by the nicknames.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, and for
everybody knows the characters in House.
Don't absolutely. We? What about the action figures?
See if we can name them all. Maddie, you could probably name them all
right away.
Could. We'll see what you can do.
Okay, there's Oshare, Fanta, Melody, Sweet, Gari, or Prof, I guess.
Yeah, she switched to Prof in the final version.
The bootleg one, it's, yeah. Kung Fu. Did I already say Melody? There's the cat, Snowflake, or Blanche.
Blanche, and she was Snowflake in the bootleg, and then Blanche. She's Blanche in the Criterion version. And let's not forget the melon-selling guy, who's the best character and also the composer of the
Banana
film.
Banana Man?
Banana yeah. Man.
Now, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here. We need to give a decent description of House. So, it's a haunted house, Japanese schoolgirl, family drama, psychic-based comedy featuring some 2D animation. No real scares. The schoolgirls aren't ever really in school very much. The family drama isn't ever particularly played out. But there are a decent number of psychics. Interestingly, the film is one of the rare times I've ever seen the otherwise very elegant Criterion Collection Company be reduced to something such as... Next month, we're coming out with a completely bonkers sort of horror movie, House.
I mean, I'm going to ruin everyone's description, because it's sort of like, it's like a Pee-wee's Playhouse, so they tried to make it a little horror-like, and it was just wonderful. It was delightful.
Okay, Brad?
It's a movie that is, it's dazzling in every way from beginning to end. It does not stop with the insanity.
Toby?
Well, while in They Live, Roddy Piper kicked ass and chewed bubblegum, these seven girls almost became bubblegum.
Toby, you can't start in referencing our own show. Maddie,
it will
can't bite off of me.
high schooler haunted house hijinks and cat's blood.
Cat's blood.
That's
So, to give you, you know, the basic overall structure, and I don't want to dwell on it too much, because Lord knows the movie doesn't give a shit, is the main schoolgirl who's the main schoolgirl?
Oshare.
Yeah,
gorgeous.
Gorgeous, who is noted
she
for...
She was Angel in the one that I watched.
The bootleg has different names.
Yeah, her name's Gorgeous, who's notable for not being anywhere near as gorgeous as Kung Fu.
That's true.
She wasn't in the movie very much.
Kung Fu is such a babe.
I know.
Yeah.
Man alive.
my top three was almost hottest schoolgirls, but I thought it was too stereotypical. Point being, Kung Fu will be my number one.
I'm a sweet fan. As shown by being sweet for Halloween.
Fanta's up there.
Yeah, that's true.
Auntie,
especially because Auntie's played by someone in her like 20s or 30s with just like heavy old makeup. So,
all right.
So,
they show her boob. She's one of like three girls who shows her boob in that. Just one.
Well, no, there's a wonderful dismembered.
Everybody shows just one. There's like three boobs in that movie. It's kind of an odd number.
So to give you the bare bones skeleton of this movie, it begins with a few carefree schoolgirls in Japan. The main girl, Gorgeous's mother has been dead, I believe, for some time.
Yes.
Has been dead for some time, and her father is taking up with a new woman, and that's starting to you know, rub her the wrong way. So she and her, so they head off in her, you know, irritation. She heads off to her aunt's house, her aunt who she hasn't seen since she was very young. On the way there, there's wacky matte paintings, other such things. They get to the house. Very crazy things start happening. It is clear that it's, you know, sort of a haunted house of horrors. The aunt who lives there turns out to be not what she appears to be. And it all climaxes in a bloody, horrific good time. Most of the girls wind up dead, sort of. And there's a nice little button on the end about, you know, accepting family and love and things.
Chopping House.
At no point does this movie ever obey one tone or theme, which is really cool. And I was wondering if you guys thought the multiple genres worked, if there's any one of them that didn't work, or...
Well, I think, like, what's kind of... this time I noticed, like, I've seen it twice. You know, once was the bootleg version, once was the Criterion version.
Me as well.
What I thought was kind of funny I noticed this time was that it does the obligatory Japanese movie ending with, like, a pop song and, like, a dreamy-eyed girl walking around in, like, a garden. And even that, like, it just felt like kind of, I don't know, like, the movie had such momentum up until that point, and, like, it was just, like, right at the end, they just do this, like, kind of, little exit with this little dreamy pop song thing, and it's almost a self-parody, just like even in its final moments, I guess.
I would go so far to say, Brad, I actually thought the button at the end didn't work. I understand what they're doing, and it's fine, and it's cool that it's completely different from the tone of the rest of the movie. It tries to give the lesson that we learned, which makes no sense, which is good. But I really like the climax of Auntie looking down to, like, just a big pool of blood, and how it just got more and more ridiculous and more out there and more daring. And then they kind of toned it down a little bit.
It's definitely my least favorite part, because it does kind of, it slows down the movie. And I don't know. It's the one part of the movie that I found kind of tedious, like, after everything, you know, like, after the, you know, just, like, the lake of blood in the house, and,
the piano,
and this shit storm of insanity, and you feel like you need a cigarette, and then, but there's still, like, 10 more minutes of this kind of, like, denouement that...
It ends with a bit of a fizzle instead of a bang, but luckily, the film itself is an endless succession of continually more amazing bangs throughout.
And the movie does do a good job, and I actually, it's getting really nitpicky saying the beginning's a little bit tedious. I think it is. I think it spends a little too much time in normal mode, but it does a really great job of when it's getting more crazy. All of its crazy is legitimate crazy. I mean, what she started out with is a girl, what was it, getting decapitated because of the well? How's the well decapitate her?
She disappears, Mac, short for stomach. Get it?
Because she's fat.
She loves to eat.
She's disgustingly fat.
She got a watermelon from the rotund watermelon salesman we saw previously. And
she's shaped like one.
After dinner, she goes to get the watermelon, but she disappears. Fanta goes to the well to look for her, pulls up the watermelon, turns out it's Mac's head, bites her butt, sits on it.
Bites her butt. It's really weird.
And then,
throws
up some watermelon blood or cat's blood.
I think it's supposed to be blood, but I don't know.
And it's pretty
watery. She makes that great laugh.
Yeah.
So she does. So you've got that going right away, and then it kind of goes back a little bit to normal, and it gets crazier and crazier, and little things that are hinted at in most haunted house horror movies, as the review on the Criterion's website point out, are there, like, oh, the refrigerator is a little bit ominous. Auntie is clearly going to be evil. The cat has something to do with it. The piano is a little bit ominous. But then, like, the piano just goes ahead and fucking eats one of them. And you know why?
Just play the piano.
Yeah, and there's thankfully a skeleton dancing around in the background while this happens because, well, fuck you. That's why.
That reminds me, my personal favorite non sequitur in the film is when it goes back to the fruit salesman guy, and for some reason there's a bear there selling fruit with him in the background.
No. You're thinking of it incorrectly. It's we go to the teacher
Stuck in traffic.
Yeah, and he's stuck in traffic, and he goes to a ramen shop.
Oh, the ramen
and
shop.
And the bear is working at the ramen shop with an old man.
Maddie's definitely the resident house expert. You've seen it how many times now?
Maybe four.
Four or five times.
I thought it was
four
five. In the Lord of the Rings set that is Terrorvision, Madeline Carey Pell is the Christopher Lee advising Peter Jackson on various details.
I should put that on my resume.
So
that's great.
So I actually, you know, as you've noticed, I'm not a very good MC for this because I'm actually having a little bit of trouble keeping up on all the details. But Maddie's here. But I was wondering if you guys were able to keep up with all the different characters and themes. I wasn't always able to differentiate the characters, but
is it because we're all Asian?
Ben, are you a racist?
Damn it all!
Did he fall asleep or not?
I did not.
He did not fall asleep when I watched it with him.
Neither time I have watched it did I fall asleep. I have watched it twice now. I did find that the characters aren't terribly distinguishable. And it's not bad because the movie doesn't...
No, they've each got a theme.
No, karate.
The movie doesn't really care that they're not distinguishable. But I actually wish they would have gone maybe even farther with the actual themes. Like the kung fu thing. Like I like the fact she's kung fuing the doors or whatever. But I wish Mac had been like
chopping firewood with their hands. How much more?
I want Mac to be this like fat, disgusting human that like dies because she
carried around a watermelon and couldn't wait to eat it after she just got done eating.
She's obsessed.
I think she literally is eating in every shot.
She's also the Japanese version of fat, which is she has round cheeks.
You know? Exactly.
My actual problem here is that I have absolutely no quantitative way of analyzing this movie because it's so far beyond anything.
It's true, like, all the films we've done so far in Terrorvision are worth watching and excellent in their own right, but this film is, like, a truly staggering work.
Not only is it truly staggering, there's really no point in doing what I've been trying to do, which is taking a step back and, like, looking at, you know, you could take Chopping Mall and be like, listen, I didn't really think there was a lot of chopping and debate the merits of the different tone or theme of the movie. House is like, boy, I didn't really know if that cat should have jumped out of that fucking painting as a cartoon at that one point in the movie when the cat jumped out of the painting as a cartoon. Oh, God. You can only really review the amazing things that go on in this movie and compliment it for being short enough that it never wears off its welcome except for maybe the last few minutes.
The best thing to do is just to review it in the parts. Which I think I'm just going to go ahead and hijack, and I'll jump in with my top three.
Mm-hmm. Do it.
Top three.
My top three is the top three moments I'm most ashamed kind of turned me on.
Whoa.
That's actually kind of similar to mine.
Number three is Auntie dancing with the skeleton. Because, one, Auntie is this old woman in this house, but she gets up and she has this, like, dance, this really surreal, and then all the skeletons are dancing with her, and she's good looking.
Does it make you feel better?
Number two, Mac's disembodied head biting a girl in the ass. And Mac herself, although she was supposed to be the... She worked it. I liked it. It was interesting.
Yeah.
And the fact that her head just like... And then right after she bit the ass, it showed the girl's ass, like... Or the girl's face, whose ass getting bitten. And it was sort of this pain, but also kind of turned on, too. Like that.
And finally, it was bouncing up and down.
Finally, number one moment I'm most ashamed turning on, when Melody is getting eaten by the piano, the fact that she gets sucked in and all of her clothes are just gone. and they don't ever show any parts, but the only thing you see of her is flesh. Like, just above the boob and just above the hand, and her arms and legs are just hanging out. And they keep finding ways to make her legs, like, cross and rub each other. And that's the number one moment I'm most ashamed turned me on.
I'm pretty sure these girls were like 14. But I mean, hey, we're all humans here. That actually is pretty close to my top three, which is top three most awkward sexual moments in the film, of which there are a few very odd ones. The first one being when the character gets chopped into a bunch of pieces. Which character gets chopped up, Maddie?
Oh, you mean Gari. She's the second to last to die.
You mean Prof?
Prof. Sorry. Prof. Gari in the
Prof. It looks like Saruman is fallible.
Prof gets chopped up and
it's canon.
Her breasts float around disembodied. Number two, after Sweet gets killed by the pile of mattresses, as they're sifting around,
they smell her panties.
Yeah, as they're sifting around, they find her underpants and they're like, "Ooh, it's her underpants. And I'm like, movie, I appreciate your spirit, but what?
And they're then Japanese. They can't help
about it, too.
And then
not her panties stink.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're just like, oh, man, her panties smell. Like, it's so gross. It's
that's
like,
really weird. And then number one is, Horrible, already kind of mentioned this, when Melody's being eaten by the piano, and then her disembodied body or her ghost or something is floating next to, spectating on herself being eaten, and she goes, ooh, naughty. Because you're kind of like looking up her dress as she's being eaten. And that's, I think, is what she's commenting on. And I love this movie, but weird.
Okay, I have a top three. My top three moments are top three moments in which I felt like I was high. I thought that I'd accidentally gotten high and didn't realize it when I was watching the movie. We'll start with the bottom one. We'll start with three, which is probably the part when it does that bizarre intercutting when the noodle guy, the ramen noodle guy, just pops into the scene.
Oh, I love that
cuts
part.
To the noodle scene like that. I did not see that coming. Number two was anything that happened on the train on the way to the house. They're just like, there's the bizarre, like, painted backgrounds.
I love that. That's beautiful.
There's that dreamlike music. And then the fucking cat is just, for some reason, already, like, waiting in their seat on the train. And they're just like, oh, look, it's the cat.
It's Blam.
They're just, like, laughing all the time. It's really disorienting. And then number one is when Gorgeous finally comes back. You know, they think that she's they thought she disappeared, and then she's back, she's, you know, now a ghost, and it's like supposed to be her point of view or something, even though she's in the shot, and they're walking down the steps to call the police on the phone, and everything goes into slow motion, and it stays like that for like a minute and a half. And they're doing is figuring out that the phone isn't working, and it keeps doing this like choppy fucking like awful like 3/4 speed, you know, film slowdown, and everything's blurry. Oh, it was great.
Maddie?
I guess mine would be top three moments I had no idea were coming, but I'm so glad they were there.
The whole movie.
Yes, the whole movie. Yeah, what would be the first one? The entire skeleton dance with Auntie, which goes on for quite a while.
Yeah.
And it's her eating Mac. But my favorite part is when the song starts being sung by the cat, and it's just it turns into a series of meows being morphed into the tune of the song as the cat in forward and reverse motion dances on the piano keys.
My top three are so boring.
Wait, Maddie hasn't finished her top
no,
three.
No, he's just making an anecdote.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
You were about to start your top three.
God, that's awful.
Carry on.
Well, I'm out. Second is probably when Kung Fu's legs... Oh, okay, she gets eaten by a lamp towards the very end. But she wills her legs back into existence to kick the cat picture in the face.
And thank God, because those are some gorgeous legs.
Oh, let me tell you. And my number one moment is, Brad already mentioned, the ramen guy popping into the frame. Okay, it's the climax of the film. It's all that's left is Prof, Kung Fu, and Fanta. Or rather, Fantasy, as she's called in the Blu-ray. They're just sitting there freaking out. And then all of a sudden, Fanta turns to her right, and the ramen guy bursts into the scene, and he's furiously eating ramen towards her. And then it cuts back to the ramen shop, where her teacher is in a completely different area. And that is my top three.
My top three is so much more boring than all of yours, which is... I had my top three funniest moments in the movie, because I thought the movie also had some really great sight gags. Most of them were already mentioned. Although my number three is not, it's the bucket twirling scene in which a man walks down some stairs and falls. He falls into a bucket, you see, and the director thought, you know, I think you should go swirling around and go out into the street and it's like weird, like, sped up Benny Hill
stop motion.
and then that was sort of the end of that, and we're never going to go back to that again.
Thank you, Shoemaker.
The best thing about that scene, though, is I mean, yes, it goes to there, but actually it begins with that weird, like, crane shot going out in that whole block
of, like,
and the little girl's drumming. Yeah. And it's like this whole pop song.
No. It's the shoemaker's cut, like the cop, yeah. The shoe cobbler.
Excuse me. Shoes maker. Plural maker.
Sorry. He only makes one shoe a day. I thought it was
accurate. He makes two shoes. He's a shoes maker.
Actually, fun fact, that little girl is the director's daughter.
Yep. Co-writer of the film.
We should get to the director in just a second here, but my number two moment is anything involving the skeleton, specifically when the piano is eating, who's it again?
Melody.
And he's in the background sort of orchestrating it, but waving his hands around. The best part about the skeleton is he's given no intro and no explanation. Now, most things aren't, such as, a lamp eating someone, but the skeleton is extra given no intro, and he's never really, like, he's always featured in the background for a lot of shots until, like, later on when he's dancing with Auntie. And my number one is the great matte painting that Brad mentioned, which is the girls get out, and there's clearly a matte painted background, but there's a farther zoom out, and the background of the matte painting is a larger matte painting. And later on in the movie, the weather, it's nighttime, and the matte painting of daytime, the smaller one is still there, but the larger one is now of nighttime. Because, well, yeah.
Because
you know,
it's the most brilliant
movie
ever.
That reminds me, actually, we should take a moment to kind of discuss the aesthetics of the film, like good and bad, because
I don't think there was any bad.
There is some striking stuff in the movie, and then there's some, like... I don't know, like, for me, I don't know if this is, like, the case with you guys, but, like, I noticed, the second time watching it, that a lot of the movie is, like, most of the shots are, like, super dark, like, it's, like, everything's kind of obscured, and, like, it looks like they wanted to shoot it at night, but they didn't have enough lights, and so it's all underexposed, and, like, you want to see more going on, at least that's kind of, like, that's what I was left wanting the second time I saw it. The first time I saw it, I didn't even care. I was just like, this is so amazing. Like, I wasn't even paying attention to, like, the like, ratio of dark and light in the shots. But on second watching, I realized, like, wow, this movie is, like, most of it is black.
Are you racist, then?
The greatest commentary on race, let's do the right thing.
You know, that said, there's also, yeah, I think, like, one of my favorite things in movies is kind of, like, obviously fake set pieces that are just played into reality, like, as with the painted matte backgrounds that obviously look like paintings, and they look specifically like really Japanese paintings, like stuff you'd see in like storybooks or magazines. And then there's, you know, there's like in, I forget who directed it, Tears of the Black Tiger, where there's that really intentional scene that's against that's on a soundstage against a big like painting of a sunset.
Yeah.
And it's just gorgeous, and nobody even tries to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Why do that when you could just do it with a computer? Woo! 3D!
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing, is, like, you know, you could just paint a wall, and it looks really cool, and there's, you know, there's that scene in their apartment when, she's talking to her dad, and he's out on the balcony golfing for some reason, and, there's, like, a sunset painting behind him, too, and then... That and just, like, all of the fucking gorgeous, like, 2D animation, all the optical effects in it are just, like, I mean, you know, they're pretty defiantly low budget, but they look amazing. And, like, I've never seen anything like that, honestly. Like, when Kung Fu is just a floating head. And there's just that, like, sea of weird blue faces behind her, kind of looking like, like Fantastic Planet or something. I mean, it's just amazing.
Apparently the movie Alice has something similar to that, the surreal French adaptation of Alice in Wonderland that I really want to see. But
oh, that scares the shit out of everybody.
It's a terrifying
yeah.
movie. It's a bit of a different thing, though. And yeah, it's true about half the amount of visual invention on display in the film is absolutely incredible, just because, like, half the stuff in that movie was never even attempted before or after. And it's just like, even when the effects are less successful, it's just that you've never seen anything like it before, and it's amazing.
And that actually is something we can analyze about the movie, is that at no point does it ever become happy with itself. It never gets stuck doing one gimmick. It never figures out one really funny thing and then beats it to death. It never figures out one thing for any more than 5 minutes, as far as even tone goes. But when it comes to inventing something clever, I don't think they beat literally any of the gags.
No, not at all.
Or any of the ideas that... The 2D, the map hangs, the side gags, the crazy
That's
deaths.
True. That's true. There's just enough of everything in it.
The
I mean, I wanted to see more of the animations and the map paintings, but, like, it's kind of great that, like, that was just one little element of it, because that movie is so all over the map that going in weird directions like that is totally called for. You know, if there was, like, a 3D sequence in the middle of it, I would totally accept it. I would just be like, oh, okay, now there's a 3D part. 3D didn't even exist in 1977.
But but they're smart. They're smart to leave you wanting more, and they always do. And even like the more generic story elements, like everyone gets killed at a haunted house. All their deaths have different varieties to them. It's not just inanimate objects eating everybody. Everything's handled differently. Auntie doesn't do the same thing to kill everybody. It's just, there's just new things every time you turn around.
And you can feel that, you know, he had his daughter help write it or influence on it, because it did feel like a kid's thing. There were things that weren't explained, and you didn't need them explained. It's like, the piano's eating her. Why? That's not the important part. The important part is that the piano is eating her. That's amazing. That picture is a barfing out blood to flood the whole room. No, like, it doesn't
matter. Kind of...
That's not the important part of this. It's like a kid just said, what a great idea. Why? Oh, because it happened that way. Look at it.
I didn't even know until just now that, like, that kid helped write the movie, and that makes so much sense.
Yep.
Because it's, like, it's such a kind of, like, weird child logic that the whole movie kind of follows. Like, you can kind of get the idea of just, like, a kid with ADD, like,
the film is definitely from the point of view
that movie in, like, in 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, like, the aunt, you know, she can go, the lights turn on because she says to turn them on. He goes, how does that happen? Oh, I've been here so long, we're friends. That's it. That's all you need. She's been in the house so long that she can talk to things to make it work. That's all you need to know.
And I don't think at any point is the movie trying to be something like David Lynch, where it's trying to emulate what it feels like to be in a dream. But it has a very dreamlike quality in that it has dream logic to it. Oh no, her dissevered head's around. I better watch out so it doesn't bite me. things that, you know, when you wake up and think about them make no sense, but while you're watching the movie, it just goes with it. And the director himself, what's his
name? Nobuhiko Obayashi.
Yeah, is basically a genre unto himself. He's made a lot of movies. We haven't seen any that are quite as crazy as this, but there's a lot of similar daring in his movies.
Yeah.
And similar attempts to use, you know, what he has to work with, which is never really a large budget.
Yeah.
He was like a big advertising guy, wasn't he?
Yeah,
yeah,
he was in commercials before.
He made all those, like, Charles Bronson commercials.
Yeah, no, he did.
Maddie and I have seen 5 or 6 other movies from the director. And, yeah, none of them are quite as good or as amazing, but there's one called School in the Crosshairs that really goes over the top with the animation and the mats and the effects. And his second best film that we've seen is actually one called Exchange Students or Transfer Student, which is nothing like House in that it doesn't go
wacky
or crazy.
Wacky.
It's just this totally great, like, touching teen
body switch
coming of age gender swap comedy. It's awesome.
That sounds great.
Yeah, another movie he did, Sada, which is actually a story apparently very well told in Japan. It does have a lot more of the gags, like the sight gags that you'd see in House. Kind of in particular, I'm thinking there's a character at the beginning who routinely the film will cut to him and he's just normal, like, real actor. And then it comes back to him, and he's a cardboard cutout for some reason. He's a black and white cardboard cutout all of a sudden. and then maybe, like, a cutout of his heart on the cardboard cutout starts bleeding.
Yep.
And it just goes to show that he really knows.
Yeah, that's actually the only other Obayashi movie that I can think of that's available in the U.S. that you can actually get on Netflix, and that's because it's the same plot as In the Realm of the Senses, and it's interesting seeing them compared. It's not as good as In the Realm of the Senses, but it's definitely an interesting film that's worth watching.
Yeah, so he's a director that's not widely available, but for people who are major film buffs or just looking for something that's completely new, I think everyone here agrees he's well worth seeking out, well worth either downloading or, in the case of House, you can get him on DVD and Blu-ray now via the Criterion Collection. Unfortunately, the Criterion print doesn't, you know, look exactly pristine. I'm sure they didn't have a lot to work with, but it looks just fine. And, yeah, so I think we can wrap it up with...
I've got a couple other things I want to talk about.
I do, too, actually.
Too bad.
Like, Horeb.
The end.
Horeb, you've seen the film for the first time the most recently. What were you expecting in the film? Did you know a lot about it coming in? Were you amazed? How did you respond since you saw it the most recently?
Well, I remember that the first scene I saw of it was the disembodied fingers playing the piano. I go, oh my god, this is going to be amazing. And I watched it, and it really wasn't what I was expecting. Like, I knew it was going to be, you know, different and odd, but it just sort of, it's so endearingly odd. It doesn't, it's not like I'm setting out to be odd. It's like I am setting out to just be as fun as possible, and I want to do this because I want to do it, and that's, you know, I just wanted to film a piano eating a girl. There we go. I wanted to film a head being pulled out of a well. Throw it in there. You know, you just, you know, you feel that there's a lot of love in it. And, yeah. I guess, I do have my top one. I have my top one guy getting turned into fruit that he hates the most. I would have to say that goes to the guy who got turned into a big thing of bananas.
Oh, really?
And I love how, like, kind of in the background that gag is. Like,
yeah. The
woman just walks by it, and he's like, oh, yeah, he's bananas now. But it doesn't really call attention to it, because at that point, that movie's just like...
Oh, yeah.
The movie...
Bananas.
Tell me why I got turned into bananas. What's the reasoning of the movie?
Because fuck you, that's why.
Exactly.
Bananas.
Oh, it was just his version of being killed. He needed to be killed, and he got killed into bananas because he hates bananas.
But he got killed into bananas? That's what we should title
did
this.
Did he hate bananas or did he
no,
like bananas?
No, he loved bananas. He hated watermelon.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why he got killed. He hated
and that's
watermelon.
Why Watermelon Man turned into a skeleton.
loves skeletons and he hates watermelon.
I love all of them. And it is worth noting the movie is confident enough in its own skin that it doesn't need to call attention to gags like that. It just happens in the background, and that gag's better than a lot of jokes in most mainstream comedies.
True.
Which is sad. Brad, you had a couple things?
Yeah, I think, like, one thing that, you know, really gets me about the movie is the editing, which is at pretty much all points just insane and kinetic and there's, you know, there's all those...
And keeps it snappy.
Yeah, it keeps it snappy and it keeps it weird and it keeps you feeling like you're on drugs through the entire thing. There's all these, I don't know what you call them, the little vignettes that just, like, you know, scope onto something you're supposed to focus on or... somebody will be talking and then there's just like a close up of their face superimposed onto a wide shot just to show who's talking and it just like it's completely batty and there's that part during the there's that weird fantasy sequence where the teacher is a knight and it cuts back and forth extremely fast and like what I thought like the first time was just like, oh my god, this is Tim and Eric. This just looks like a Tim and Eric kind of thing before Tim and Eric ever existed. And then it's like, you know, to kind of like bring it into modern terms of like Tim and Eric and like YouTube poops of, you know, people, kind of bringing the MTV editing to its extreme and seeing how quickly and spastically you can cut something, before it becomes incomprehensible, like a Saw movie. And, like, that movie is, like, a YouTube poop of itself. Like, you wouldn't be able to... It's like Lady Gaga. Like, you can't parody a parody because it's already as batshit crazy as it can be. And like, it, for that to happen in like 1977 before, you know, any of the kind of editing innovations that we've come up with.
Before irony.
Like, it's just like, it's so far ahead of its time. Like that movie appeals to like what's going on now. And does it like most of the time way more successfully than what's going on now, you know, like that kind of like crazy editing style that like that MTV and Saw movies attempt and fail at miserably and make you want to puke. Like House does it and just owns it, and it's just so fun to watch, and it's mostly like a lot of it is the editing of the movie.
The classic 1990s parody film Plump Fiction would disagree with you in your assessment that you can't parody something that's already ridiculous. And I would also like to add that while there's a lot of rapid cuts going on, it's never disorientating, with the exception of a few scenes where it's intentional, and that always left me feeling like I was, you know, with a director in good hands, in the hands of a director who knew exactly what he was doing at all times. At no point did the insanity on screen seem like it was getting away from him, that it was that he had this that bad shit of a vision and was perfectly in control at all times and portraying it, which is great.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it does feel like a very perfect translation of the imagination to the screen. That said, like, it's an insane imagination. So the editing, I think, like, you know, it is kind of disorienting through, I think, like, a good deal of it, but, like, in kind of a, you know, yeah, in an intentional way. Yeah.
One thing that I kind of want to talk about before we close up shop tonight is sort of the film. I've noticed, you know, we all love and respect the film, but I've noticed that it has a bit of a people who haven't seen it and don't know all that much about it, but have heard of it, kind of get the wrong idea of how they're supposed to view it and kind of what it is. I think it's kind of getting this reputation for being a so bad it's good film, or like a film to appreciate ironically.
Yeah, that's not the truth at all, though.
I know, and so I think
people go into it with, like, you know, The Room or like Soul 2 mentality, which, like, isn't the approach.
Yeah, like, yeah. Because it's so weird and uses so many kind of like creative, like archaic visual tricks that look so fake, people kind of have this fallacious assumption that it means that it's a bad thing that can be laughed at, which is of course the wrong thing, because every one of those elements is done intentionally. And the film is just genuinely brilliant and genuinely great in and out.
Word.
For sure.
Well, I think we all really like the movie. Let's do a quick...
You want to do Netflix ratings?
Yeah.
Let's do Netflix ratings.
Let's do a quick Netflix rating. Brad?
5. Perfect. Shit. 5. I love it. I'm smiling through the entire movie.
Orb?
I'm going to give it 5 stars because it's my Netflix. 4.5.
Maddie?
5. 5 by 5.
Toby?
I'm going 4.5 as well. It is, I think it's, you know, definitely one of my favorite films of all time, at least in the top, you know, 50 or 100. It's just a beautiful universe unto itself.
God, I was going to give it a 4. I feel bad.
You should. Please leave.
It's a really fun, creative movie. I actually wanted to watch it a few more times, even though on the second viewing, I kind of felt like I did the first time, where I was like, this is really new, and I really like this. There's some stuff that isn't perfect. It just didn't, perfectly, I guess, grip me. Maddie's going to kill me. And yet, I would definitely watch again in a heartbeat, and it would never be a drag. So, I mean, I guess that's more than a 4.
It's great to show to your friends.
And
I can't wait to show this to other people.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
I love that you can watch it, and every time you see it, you're going to notice things you haven't seen before. Like, you've seen it 4 times, Maddie, and every time I'm sure you saw things that you didn't see the last time.
I sure did.
Purchase it without even seeing first, because you will not regret it unless you're a piece of crap.
In which case, get the fuck out of our podcast.
Get out of get out.
Who let that
get out of
our way? Square.
Get out of here and get eaten by a piano.
Go watch My Soul to Take, you weak ass bastard.
All right, well, I suppose that's all then. And to play us out, that awesome pop song from House. I see in your eyes where tomorrow.